right, we are back and in full force, live on episode 408. Is that what it is?
Yeah.
Is it 408?
I always laugh at you. 408.
At 408.
Yes.
So we are live, we are back and in charge and have a lot of fun here. We got Adam Bergstrom on the show and going to have a good conversation today.
I have to say, welcome winter. We're actually getting a little bit of one here in Southern California.
I know, right?
Not much, but it's chilly in the mornings, chilly at night.
It's all the way down to the high 30s.
For us, that's pretty cold. Pretty cool. We were speaking with Adam before the show and he's liking it too.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like we're getting a change. We had a terrible heat wave last summer. So for us, this is a really nice change. So
I know, right?
1 week till Christmas, 1 week today.
I know, that's a good thing.
Here we are.
Wow, I love it a lot.
You haven't done any shopping, have you? I'm going to call you out. You haven't done any shopping.
Have done no shopping.
So I expect a lump of coal in my stocking this year. Is that what I'm getting?
We'll figure it out.
Okay.
Thankfully, there's Amazon for,
right.
to save.
Prime, right.
Amazon Prime to save us late in the game. So for everyone that is new to the show, we do broadcast live every Friday morning at 9 a.m. Pacific time. So if you guys would like to join us, you can do that at extremehealthradio.com/live. And we are 100% listener supported. So if you guys would like to support the show, you can bookmark and use our Amazon link. That's a great way to help support us. We really appreciate you guys doing that. And we appreciate you guys sharing all of our shows as well. So that's really, really helpful to us. And I see we have Farmer Mark and some other people in the chat room. Thanks for joining us, Farmer Mark.
Love Farmer Mark. I just realized I never replied to an email until right now that he wrote me.
Oh, no.
So I'm gonna deal with that on the side for a second here.
Okay. So today we have Adam Bergstrom on the show. And if you guys are unfamiliar with his work, fascinating guy. he's been on the show multiple times, lots of different times. And he's very, he talks about solar nutrition and the timing of when we eat. And a lot of people talk about food combining. A lot of people talk about different types of diets to consume, the paleo diet, the raw food diet, vegan, vegetarian, all these types of things. And then other people are talking about food combining, which is an interesting concept and something that I still do, kind of in a small way, but I still do it. I still follow the basic principles of food combining. But then Adam is, he talks about solar nutrition. And he's got a couple different websites, solartiming.com, sunsyncnutrition.com. And he talks about how important it is to eat food at the right time. And it all corresponds to our organ health and to the rotation of the sun and the angle the sun hits the food and all kinds of interesting things. So thanks so much, Adam, for joining us today.
Great to be with you.
Now, what did you have for breakfast this fine morning?
I haven't eaten it yet.
Oh, really?
She was interrupted with it. But usually I take it at stomach time between 7 and 9 in the morning. But I did have my cobalamin tonic.
So what happens when you skip breakfast? So like this morning you haven't had anything?
I had my cobalamin tonic, which is coffee and cocoa and maple syrup.
Okay. And for people that are unfamiliar with the cobalamin tonic, explain what that is to people.
It's actually coffee, cocoa, and maple syrup combined, and it's a hormone balancer. And it's good for your teeth, too, and a lot of things. You know, coffee is underrated for what it does. Caffeine is a major cancer fighter.
Well, they talk about, don't they talk about people, I think there's studies and everything about the lower incidence of colorectal cancer and people that consume coffee, right?
A whole bunch of things. Everything from Lou Gehrig's disease to Alzheimer's to a list of various conditions. Gallstones, bowel cancer, you name it.
Now, do you think these are people that are just sort of drinking like black coffee from Starbucks? Or what? Do you think that matters?
The
quality of the coffee?
Even Starbucks, it's okay. I prefer organic. Tree coffee. Most coffee is tree coffee. I take it in the morning. If it was bush coffee, like the Yemeni's mocha, then I would have it at midday.
Really? So you could you drink a Yemeni's? How much coffee do you drink at a time if you do a cup of? Is this just a regular 8-ounce cup?
I have about, before noon, I probably consume about a quart of coffee.
A quart?
Oh my gosh.
My goodness.
5 cups are what Johns Hopkins and other organizations have found are gives you the maximum protection. But even if you drink it on time, you get protection. You get more protection. It's like using a sniper's rifle instead of a hand grenade. Most people, by eating out of time, use a hand grenade. Now, I really do timing combining. Timing combining, not just because it rhymes, because the timing is everything.
Uh-huh.
And so whether you eat paleo, vegan, or whatever you eat, when you eat it on time, it increases your absorption, your assimilation, your utilization, and your elimination of the food.
And so is that because is that just because of our organs work at specific times as well?
They definitely do. The Chinese knew about this at least 1,000 years ago, probably more. It's called the Midnight Noon Law, and it's where it has the organs all on specific time, which is being validated by science. Lung time is 3 to 5 in the morning. Asthma attacks are much more frequent at exactly 4 o'clock in the morning because we have less oxygen at that time than any other time of the day in our body, and we have the most at 4 o'clock in the afternoon, which is why almost all Olympic marathon records are broken at bladder time between 3 and 5 in the afternoon.
Isn't that interesting? So I got to go back to the coffee here. I'm curious because I've been sort of reintroducing coffee. I guess introducing because I never really into coffee.
I'm wondering the ratio also about this cobalamin tonic versus just regular coffee and the effects and the...
Yeah.
Yeah, Adam, is there a... I'm sorry, I totally cut you off.
No, that's fine.
Is there a difference and a benefit to doing the cobalamin tonic versus just straight black coffee?
Yes. The cocoa tames the coffee, so you get the best of both worlds. Both of them have oxalic acid in it, but it tones them down. Oxalic acid itself is a cancer fighter, but it also can cause kidney stones.
Hmm.
In the same way that if you eat cruciferous vegetables, it can protect you from cancer, but it turns off the thyroid.
Right.
So, interesting.
And actually, that's why the spleen pancreas meridian from 9 to 11 in the morning is your cancer-fighting meridian, and your triple heater or thyroid meridian, which occurs at 9 to 11 at night, is actually the meridian that protects your thyroid.
So when you drink a quart, how many cups are in a quart? I'm curious.
About 4 cups.
About four cups?
And you don't have to, you know... Different people are sensitive to caffeine in different ways. I'm not recommending people go out and drink a quart of coffee. Some people have as much as 2 quarts and don't get hurt. There's been people who have drank 86 cups of coffee a day. And this one woman, I believe, lived to 106 doing that.
Whew, 106.
She drank small cups, to be fair, those little Demitasse cups.
So how long have you been doing as much coffee as you're doing?
Since Swami Nitty Gritty recommended it when I was in my 40s, I'd never drank coffee before, except maybe when I decided to drive for 2 days straight without sleeping.
Well, that brings up a really important question. How do you get over that? Did you ever get the shakes? Because, I mean, when I drink straight coffee, I think Justin, too, we're kind of screwed.
So
you're
sensitive.
Shaking and you feel kind of gross. Did you go through that, and how does someone overcome that kind of thing?
I never had it because I drank it on time. I don't drink coffee in the middle of the day or nighttime unless you can tweak it in certain ways by adding salt and different things to affect the time. But at first, I didn't have any effect from it, surprisingly, except I noticed more awakeness. And by the way, another thing is that coffee drinkers have far less suicide rates.
Hmm.
So how come,
wow.
You know, for the longest time, I heard that coffee was the greatest thing ever, and then when I got into health, everyone was sort of poo-pooing it and talking about how stimulating and horrible it is, and now it's coming around again.
And then you hear about this mold problem.
Yeah, that's right. We got a DVD in the mail the other day from, Anne-Marie Gianni, right?
Yeah, it was, actually.
Yeah, she gave
called
us
Moldy.
A DVD called Moldy. And so what's this resurgence? Like, is there any proof or evidence that coffee ever was a bad thing?
The evidence was mostly based on single tests. And in fact, back in the 80s, when I was researching this for our book, Yes, No, Maybe, Chronobiotic Nutrition, mm-hmm. my co-author wanted me to find evidence. So I went to the medical library and went through it, looking for all the things about it increasing breast lumps and breast cancer and urinary cancer. And to my amazement, all the studies in the medical books were pro-coffee. They did everything to try and disprove it as being a problem. Even the increased heartbeat, you actually get a lower heartbeat after a certain amount of time. And by the way, my new blog series on Sync Nutrition is The Heart Is Not a Pump. The heart does not pump your blood, contrary to popular belief.
Yes, I have been reading about that lately. Someone, I forget who it was, but was talking about how there's all kinds of little microscopic capillaries and pumps in the fine areas of the arteries and things that actually do the pumping. But the blood does circulate through the heart, right?
It goes through the heart. It's a regulator rather than a pump. Our capillaries do the pumping through pressure. Mm-hmm. Each of us has, believe it or not, 2,000 pounds of pressure on each of our bodies at any given time.
2,000
pounds. And
that
pressure, we don't even feel it. Yet it's what drives the blood through our bodies. And without it, the trees could not rise the sap to the top of like a 300-foot redwood. A redwood has no heart, and yet look how it circulates its sap without any problems. And there have been a couple of people on record whose heart has completely stopped, and they still circulate their blood through the collateral circulation.
Yeah, I've heard that. Are you familiar with Ormus?
I am familiar with it. I took a workshop the original founder of it, who was the... David Hudson.
David Hudson, right.
He was the agricultural... the Secretary of Agriculture for Arizona. And, by the way, he never delivered on his product.
What do you mean, his product?
There is no Ormus. What you're seeing is Ormus is not really Ormus. He never delivered it. His Ormus gold or white powder gold was never developed. So when I took his workshop, my friends asked, should they invest? Because at that time he was looking for investors. And I said, hide your purse and your wallet. I said, but if he does another workshop, I'll be back. He's a fascinating man. You'll find videos on it. But he never really developed his product.
Now, Ormus, for people that aren't familiar, I still don't really understand. I know Adam can give a good explanation of it, but from what I understand, it's sort of it's almost like spirit matter. It's an element that can flip minerals from an Ormus state to a metallic state, and it has a property of levity. And so that's why sap, like you were just talking about, because that's what kind of came up in my mind when you said tree sap. How do trees get the sap all the way up and the nutrients into the leaves that are, you know, hundreds of feet high sometimes? It's because of the Ormus and the spiral action of how trees pump their sap, right?
That is actually done by gravity. The 2,000 pounds per square inch is enough pressure to move something. Even in a plumber, you need a lot less pressure to move things. Same with electricity, with water. But what Ormus would be, it does exist, but he never developed a product, it is superconductivity. Mm-hmm. Superconductivity is ultimate radical longevity. You could theoretically live forever. And by the way, we are designed, and people did live this long at one time. 154 is your genetically determined aging time. And doctors want us to believe it's 120, but they have hidden a lot of the records. And if you go back in the old books like I do, all the way back to B.C., you will find records of people, legitimate records of people who have lived 154.
Wow, that's interesting. And I wonder if they're consuming. You know, I've seen Ormus products on the internet. Do you think those are not real?
I think they're not real.
Yeah, because how would you know, right? I mean, it's just as a layperson.
Especially homeopathic Ormus. You know, you can't have a superconductive a homeopathy type of Ormus.
Uh-huh.
And actually, superconductivity is a very real thing. It's being examined, and usually it has to be done at specific temperatures, but it's done all the time at regular temperatures. We are superconductive. Anytime you have an ESP experience, an extrasensory perception experience, you're using superconductivity, and even faster than the speed of light. It's why two people can have a simultaneous thought across the world. Mm-hmm. Even within the realm of light, since light goes around the world 7.5 times in a second, it's pretty easy to read someone else's mind in Russia or France.
Mm-hmm. Like a remote viewing kind of thing.
Remote viewing, yep. That's clairvoyance.
Okay.
And there's clairaudience, every type. We can feel. You can actually get a massage at a distance. I've actually done work on people 1,000 miles away by using applied kinesiology.
Yeah, people do Reiki, right, Kate?
Reiki.
You've had that, right? People doing...
or any kind of energy medicine, really.
Mm-hmm. Any kind of energy that involves magnetics. You can't use, like if you see a Touch for Health book, you can't use your neurolymphatics at a distance, but you can use your neuromagnetics and electromagnetics.
Oh, do you want to?
Yeah, I'm curious about that. So the times that I've worked with a couple people doing energy medicine over the phone, you know, I actually feel it in my body. What... I know they're directing it, you know, that energy field or whatever you want to say towards me, but how is this happening when stuff isn't directed toward a specific person and they're feeling these things? Is there a difference going on there?
Well, it's going on all the time. Once upon a time, I made a gesture in the presence of Swami Nitty Gritty, and he told me, "You just wrecked a train." I said, "What? By moving my arm like that?" He said, "Yes." I said, "Was anyone killed?" He said, "No, only the engineer was hurt."
Oh my God. We don't know what we're doing at all?
We have no idea of the power of our gestures. Every time you give Richard the Third or give the peace sign, something is happening elsewhere in the universe. I guarantee it.
Well, you know what? I've heard people talking about that, especially in the... you know, the people that talk about the law of attraction and all that, where if you're angry, you know, if you're driving down the street and you're just screaming out because someone cuts you off, you know, you have some other issues going on in your life, but you scream out like that, that's essentially doing an audible version of what you just said, where you're putting out that kind of energy.
Creating some sort of disaster somewhere?
Yeah.
Even worse is when you don't express it. Because then the bottled up emotions have even more power.
Okay, so I got to ask you about this, because this is something that...
This is interesting.
Yeah, just having a balance of expressing the... Because I think, I mean, you know, Kate, you and I were talking recently how we just think a lot of people are just angry. Mm. You know, a lot of people
really
are angry about...
angry people.
Yeah, how their life has turned out, or they're not satisfied, or they feel like they're lied to, and it sort of comes out, and you see it mostly when people drive, because that's one of the only places where you get to interact with the mass culture at large. And but when you don't express that anger, it's worse, like you just said. But then how do you balance that with just being an angry person and screaming and yelling in your car?
At other people. You don't want to be this explosive person, but what's the balance between expressing and suppressing?
Yeah.
In California, you don't want to shout at somebody. They might shoot you.
Right.
If it's the season to shoot the other drivers.
Right, right.
Tis the season.
But we want a rage to liver, because anger is a healthy liver if it's used in a constructive way. A rage to live, a rage to liver, is called courage, and that comes out of the liver.
Okay, so you're saying it's important to express, no matter how often it happens.
Yes. Well, to express it within yourself. Now, it's not a good idea to go around giving people the finger. There are consequences. Mm-hmm. But you need to get out of it, because otherwise we stuff it. And when we stuff it, we cause more problems than the release of the emotion. Mm-hmm. Now, the release of the emotion can be by sticking out your tongue, a very healthy way to do it, by yawning and stretching, by color therapy. There's a lot of different ways to do it. By free-form dancing, mm-hmm. This gets rid of anger. But we need to, once in a while, just say, "I'm not going to take it anymore."
Mm-hmm.
And that leads to change in people's life. You cannot climb out of a depression without anger. There's no way to get to joy through that. That's been shown in the science of Centics. Even Scientology has shown that. It's been shown by lots of different sciences and even religions and even philosophies.
So you're saying there's no way to get through joy without becoming angry first?
Catharsis is what the psychologists call it.
Mm. Are you familiar with bioenergetics?
Yes, I am. Yeah. Alexander Lowen.
Yeah, I was learning about that recently, about because when you said stick your tongue out, they do that, and as part of bioenergetics, if my memory's correct.
No, I believe we also do that. I remember when I was really involved in yoga there for a while, and I don't think it was called, maybe it was called Dragon or something.
Oh, right.
But you cross your eyes and stick out your tongue and do this, you know, what looks like a crazy thing. But man, it felt really releasing during those classes. Some people would get kind of emotional, actually.
The lion pose.
Is it lion? There you go. Lion. Yep.
Do you do yoga, Adam?
The other one is called Shiva Lingam, when you give the finger.
Shiva Lingam.
Really? What is that?
And the other one's called Leaf in the Wind, when you take your thumb, put it on your nose, and flick it.
Oh, yes.
who knew?
Those are all energy-releasing gestures.
Do you practice yoga?
Yes. My partner in crime here, Vibrant Gal, she does it regularly.
Wow.
I don't do it regularly. I used to do Sufi dancing and Sufi exercises back in the day.
Huh.
So a second ago, you mentioned something that I thought was interesting. You were talking about, I think, Kate, when you were mentioning long distance sort of energy healing, and you mentioned magnetics, Adam. I was looking recently at those magnetic mattress pads and doing magnets on your Vitamix blender and stuff. Are you a fan of using magnets in these kind of ways?
Once a month on full moon day. Otherwise, you're messing with your electronic magnetic field in the same way you would with a smart meter. Why would I put a magnet right up against my body if I won't even be around a smart meter? But once a month, it's good to realign yourself on magnets. Now, they sell these magnets a lot of times by having you step on it. And, of course, you will be strengthened immediately. If you wish to be magnetized before performing martial arts or competing in a sport, it gives you energy. I'm not against magnets. In fact, they're very useful for energy gathering. But when you do it all the time, you're draining your energy. It's like being exposed to the full moon all the time. It all has to do with timing when we do these things.
So you'd want to do it on the full moon?
On the full moon is a good time to do it. Yep.
And okay.
You break the timing rules at that time. The pressure in your body is much more. You might as well go with the flow.
Yeah, I've heard you talk about that. You talk about doing everything in the opposite timing, right?
That has to do with Gaudiali's color therapy, you know, where you where turquoise is a cure for orange. You know, all your traumas and your diseases come at certain times of the day, of the month, of the year. In fact, many people will have mysterious problems happen on a certain day that's the anniversary of when something else happened. I've seen people three years in a row on the same day have rectal bleeding and couldn't figure it out, but it was the day that he realized that his girlfriend was pregnant and he would have to drop out of school to support her. So every time after that, on their anniversary, he got rectal bleeding.
Oh my goodness, that's so weird.
Could it also be the same with, I mean, this is kind of crazy, but not really. Is it the same with, like, I was at Whole Foods the other day and I ran into somebody I hadn't seen in a long time, and he was like the head of the butcher department, and he said, yeah, my birthday's coming up again in February, and you know, every year on my birthday it rains. And he said for 15 or 25 years or something, no, ever since he was 6, and he's into his 40s now, it's rained every day on his birthday. Is there something going on with that too?
He's spiritually blessed.
He's spiritually blessed.
That's a very, very good sign. The Swami I studied with, Swami Nitty Gritty, Adonal Lay, he would only initiate you if it rained. You had to generate the rain through your own love.
Really?
If you couldn't do that, he would not initiate you. It had to rain.
Really?
And I would see, one time I was a witness of someone, he said, give it all your love and make it rain and I'll initiate you. So the guy did and it started pouring. He said, give more love. It rained harder. And he said, nope, more love. And then a cloudburst occurred and he said, you're accepted. And he initiated him.
So is that what was going on with like rain dancing back in the ancient cultures to bring rain upon their parched land? I mean, was it the love or was it the intent or what was it that actually opened the skies in those situations, I think?
The love.
The love.
The love comes in the trees. That's why we have a drought in California. They've cut all the trees down. They're even blaming the trees for the drought when actually the trees attract the rain. Almond trees, which are criticized for taking up too much water, actually bring the rain. Pine trees are the best. They bring the most rain. In fact, they self-water themselves. They take the water out of the air into the pine needles, drop it to the ground, and self-water themselves.
So is it horrible that we're growing Christmas trees and cutting them down every year and bringing them into our house?
Yeah, probably so.
Oh.
We're allowed minor indiscretions.
Yeah, I know, right?
For the spirit of the year.
So that's interesting. It's about the love and the trees. That's fascinating. I've never heard that before. I haven't heard a lot of things when you come on the show, Adam. I have to be honest.
Hey, Adam, we have a question
cut
here.
Cut down a lot of trees here. You know, we had huge oak forests all the way up. They've cut them down for vineyards. We're even growing rice in Southern California and Northern California. And then we wonder why the water stays away. You can actually take it out of the air. In fact, there are inventors like John Nordberg who has figured out a way to take it right out of the air and rehydrate the entire Sahara Desert. But no one listens to the legitimate inventors. They only want to do desal and things like that. And gray water, one of the major causes of MRSA in our society, and it's on the rise. Everybody's recycling their water with all the hospital antibiotics and even the genes of these toxic antibiotic resistance bacteria that are getting through to people, and they wonder why there's so much MRSA, especially in LA.
So this gray water thing, yeah, can you talk about that a little? I'm interested in this because a couple weeks ago I was at this really awesome ecology center a couple miles from our house, and it's basically this big plot of land with an awesome old, you know, 1900s farmhouse on it, and the couple that bought it turned it into this sustainable, you know, teaching the community to come in and learn how to properly care for, you know, your organics and recycle your water and collect rainwater. But they're all about this gray water thing, so I know it's different than like a, you know, hospital type situation, but is gray water, what is gray water for people who don't know, and can it be ever a good thing?
Recycled water, and it's really not a good thing. Now, right down the street from me, there's an expert in this matter called Ido McGowan. I suggest you might have him on your show sometime.
Okay. How do you spell his name?
Ido McGowan. He actually was the water expert all through Africa, I think about 18 countries, and he's been warning about gray water. But even though he's in this area, he hasn't affected anybody's thinking. In fact, the ecologists are against him. But he's seen it happen, knows the story. None of our water recycling plants are capable of straining these bacteria and their genes out of the water. It could be done, but it's not. And so people are at risk. A child with gray water on the lawn can be playing football on the football field, scrape their elbow, and die.
So the gray water, I hadn't even heard of that term. I feel like
I have heard about it in the last month. I had no idea what it was either.
So there
is recycled water. I think they have what they call white water, which is your water that's clean and pristine. Then there's gray water, the in-between, and then there's black water, which is just utter sewage water.
So what's the difference with somebody like my parents using their sprinklers on their lawn versus when they have, you know, driving down the freeway and you see a sign saying we use reclaimed water? I mean, is it exactly the same thing?
Same thing. Reclaimed water is another word for gray water.
So people who have lawns aren't really technically safe watering their lawns at all?
Not with gray water. Not if they want to play football out there. And also, it gets into your food and things like that, too. So you have to be careful. There's a lot of cases. I know people personally who have had those type of infections that don't stop. Nothing can stop them. And now, they do have some antibiotics now that claim to work against MRSA. They're finding that the bacteria is now outwitting them. So we're in a crisis situation here.
Yeah, it's a really, really challenging time too, because, you know, people are getting cuts, and, you know, I don't know, is staff the same as MRSA, or can staff turn into MRSA?
Staph can turn into it.
Okay.
Yeah. Kinds of bacteria out there, and bacteria evolves. You know, when you can multiply by the minute instead of have to wait 9 months, you've got an advantage over human beings. So we have to take these bacteria and viruses seriously.
Yeah, interesting. So how would people water their lawns or their garden?
This poses a big problem, huh?
Yeah.
Well, if you live in the desert, not a good idea. Now, if you bring the trees back, you'll have no problem watering your lawn. There'll be plenty of rain here. But because we're cutting them down every day, new houses, new vineyards, new parks, no more golf courses, golf courses. What do we expect?
So it would take
Get worse.
It would take everybody basically to start planting trees everywhere. It's not going to matter if a person that owns a house plants a whole backyard full of trees, because they're still going to have to water the trees with the gray water. And so unless we bring trees throughout the whole nation or state, nothing's going to happen.
No drop of precious love is ever wasted, but we need a lot of trees.
We do. And so am I correct in saying that, at least it's my contention, that when we cut the trees down, it creates the sun hitting the actual earth, and it creates the temperature difference on the actual land of the earth. And then that, because of the temperature difference, it drives the water table lower. And so the more trees we cut down over time, you know, the water table goes lower, there's less precipitation and cloud cover, and then this just starts a whole cycle, right, of an area which is, right now, California. I mean, we're just sort of witnessing it, seeing it with our own eyes, being turned into a desert, right?
Yes. It's not, the temperature is very minor. They actually attract the water. They attract the rain. You won't have rain. And by the way, on SunSync Nutrition, our subscriber website, I've written a series of blogs with evidence about it. And also, the permaculturists know this too. You can ask Bill Mollison, people like that, Mark Shepard. They know about this phenomena.
So this is a really popular thing out here in California where people, what is it called, Kate? Your dad was going to do this.
Drought-resistant, it's Kill Your Lawn program.
It's a Kill Your Lawn program, and so they're trying to get everyone to use sort of these
drought-resistant natives and things and replant and take out all their grass. And we read an article somewhere about it, that changing, that actually creating more of a desert environment because you're changing the water table when you do that. Is that correct in your opinion?
In a way, the best way is to bring back the trees. Then we could water the grass all we want to. We could actually, if we planted more trees, we could actually convert this almost to a rainforest. Like up in the Olympic Peninsula.
Really?
I got my tongue a little tangled on that one.
Yeah, well, I heard David Wolf has a fruit tree planting organization. I think that their goal is 6 billion fruit trees on the planet. But we need more projects like that, don't we?
Excellent. And pine trees, too. Remember, we have the pine nut for the pineal gland.
And pine tree, the needles are really high in MSM and vitamin C, right? People make teas out of those things.
The needles especially attract water and drip it on the ground, and they're self-watering trees.
Isn't that fascinating? How does, I mean, like you were talking earlier, how does the sap go all the way from the bottom of the tree and all the way to the top? I mean, these giant oak trees, these things are just so
pretty
fascinating.
Amazing.
How does all this work?
Gravity and sunshine. Sunshine itself is a driver. That's why I also eat on time. Angular momentum drives your body and can make you live a lot longer than people expect.
Yeah, sunshine. I was listening to something recently about how people that are anemic are very, very, most of the time can be
Vitamin D deficient
and lack of sunshine correlates with anemia.
I know people taking 50,000 international units of vitamin D on a regular basis, and they're low on vitamin D. The sun is the best way. And one way to get it, if you don't want to go out in the sun, simply put your food out under the direct sun at midday, cover it with saran wrap so you let the vitamin C vibrations through, and you have better vitamin D because you have multiple ones. They usually make it in a single frequency because it's the most convenient for them, and actually vitamin D comes in multiple frequencies. You can get it by putting your food out in the sun for 20 minutes.
So can you do it without doing this saran wrap?
If you want flies and things to get in your food and don't mind it, just as good. Yeah. Glass won't work. Plastic won't work. Bottles won't work unless you have a quartz one. But saran wrap will pass those frequencies. But you can put it out in the sun. You know, at a picnic you do anyway.
So when we're taking, like in the wintertime, we're taking much more vitamin D. But I usually pop one of those Now supplements that are like the 5,000 international units. Is that enough? Because you said that, you know, your friend of yours was taking much more than that. And if you get it naturally, you get it different frequencies. So is that enough, do you think?
If you take the 800, above 800 international units of vitamin D in a capsule form, you actually drive calcium out of your bones. Any nutritional textbook will show that. And yet, they're selling people way above 800. It's up to, like I say, my friend is taking 50,000, which is supposed to be toxic. It's only supposed to be done on a weekly basis, yet her doctor has been prescribing 50,000 international units over an extended period of time.
How is she doing?
Not very well. In fact, there's all kinds of bone degeneration and joint degeneration, and they haven't figured out that it's caused by the vitamin D.
So how much do you think we should be taking in the winter months?
You should be getting it from the sun. And contrary to popular belief, you can get it at any angle of illumination. You get it mainly, the highest form of D is from 11:30 to 12 at any time of the year. I mean, think about it. How do the Eskimos get vitamin D? How does the seals get it? Do they go south during the night to the equator and then swim back so the Eskimos can get their vitamin D?
Yeah.
No, they don't.
They go to Hawaii and back. They're really fast.
They're really quick.
They have learned to be superconductive.
Go ahead.
No.
So you're saying there's multiple. So when you get vitamin D, I've heard you say before that you can actually get it without being directly in the sun. It's sort of a reflective thing, right? You can sit in the shade and still get ample amounts of vitamin D?
Not only that, with you two, Kate can go out in the sun and be near you, and you'll get the vitamin D from her. Or you can go out in the sun and give it to Kate. That's been done, too, in laboratory tests. People have forgotten that vitamin D is one of the most unusual vitamins ever to come down the line. Swami Nitty Gritty called it vitamin death because it overcomes death.
So how is that working? You're passing it on how?
Directly through your breath and carbon dioxide and oxygen exchange. Carbon dioxide is the secret of extrasensory perception, by the way. In the same way that you have a so-called lead pencil, it's really carbon. And it writes on our cellular structure. Every time you breathe around a person, you have the opportunity to read your mind, the other person's mind. Because we're not accustomed to doing that, we tune in on the internet and our verbal gestures and things like that. Mm-hmm. We don't tune in to the unconscious. You're among primitive people. They don't have to open their mouth to speak. In fact, Swami Nitty Gritty used to talk to me with his eyes all the time. You see it in certain sci-fi movies, but it's a very real thing.
Huh. So you're picking up on the energy when he would look at you.
That's right. He would actually communicate with you and tell you things.
Wow.
That's interesting. So go back to vitamin D. From what I understand, it's not actually a why do we call it a vitamin? It's more like a steroid, isn't it? Or like a hormone, isn't it?
More like a hormone. You're correct. Yep. And a lot of things, you know, vitamins are often misnamed. Some things are not really true vitamins. It's supposed to be totally necessary. By some definitions, caffeine is a vitamin.
Really?
That's interesting.
It helps an amine, vitamine, so it helps amino acids. And some necessary ones, just like some amino acids are in between, you know, they may be necessary and they may be not. We can manufacture them and sometimes we can't. Tyrosine is an example. And by the way, tyrosine in our skin and phenylalanine are necessary to drive our bodies. That's how vitamin D works and how we get sunshine energy and can actually live off the sun from these cells. our adrenal medulla, which we picture in our textbooks as being in the very center of the adrenal gland only, is in every cellular skin cell in our body that has tyrosine and phenylalanine.
So it's almost like a hologram, kind of.
That's right. You know, years ago when I investigated the adrenal glands, studying Chinese medicine, I realized that something's wrong. The adrenal cortex on the outside and the adrenal medulla in the middle, which contains adrenaline, they should be reversed. And then I found out that we have multiple adrenal glands through our body, multiple medullas, multiple cortexes, and so that explained part of the problems. But then when I realized that General Electric had discovered this in the 1910s, and they knew that the adrenal glands, the adrenal medulla, was mostly on the outside of our body, not in that little bitty picture we see in the medical textbooks.
That's so crazy. We have a listener question here that I want to get to in a second about food allergies, but I wanted to ask you, before we get to that, can you explain, and I've heard different people say these types of things about, you know, when we people think, oh, we need to consume more vitamin C, or we need to consume more copper, or I don't know, you know, pick a mineral or a vitamin. People think that we eat the vitamin and then our body absorbs the vitamin, but there's a lot really going on in terms of, like, we don't eat something and then it goes into the cell. It's sort of transmutated by the bacteria in our body, and it's not a one-to-one situation going on. There's a lot more going on than just consuming calcium and getting calcium, right?
Timing. It's transport delivery. If I decide to go down to Ventura at 5 o'clock at the evening, I'm going to have trouble getting there. I could walk faster to Ventura at that time. Same thing with our body. We have transport delivery times, and if you synchronize with those times, if I want to drive down to Ventura at 12 midnight, great. Or even maybe 3 in the afternoon. I wait an hour, and then I have a problem. So the timing can be very specific, even to the minute sometimes, can enhance your health dramatically.
It's really interesting.
I think it's really important in that same vein to listen, to reconnect, to listen to our intuition about things. Because, I mean, example, yesterday I was driving, I have a part-time job, and I was leaving. And I was going by and I saw my friend's car outside of her work. And I thought, oh, I'm going to run in and say hi real quick, but I don't really have the time. So I thought, oh, you know, I'll talk to her later. So I get in my car and I leave. Well, she left just a few minutes after me and ended up being in a 5-car pileup on the way home. And
I
thought, wow, everything within me said, stop and see your friend, stop and see your friend. And I ignored that. And I thought, wow, that probably would have, I mean, you can't say for sure, but it probably would have kept her at work longer and both of us would have missed that accident and she wouldn't have been in it. But I mean, you can't beat yourself up over that. But I thought I had this strong pull to see her and I ignored that gut. So that kind of timing is probably really important to reconnect to too, huh?
That's really
extremely important. What got me interested in timing in the first place was a book from China called the I Ching, which has been around for thousands and thousands of years. 90% of the I Ching is about being in time, not being on time. Because you can be on time and the other fellow may be late. But if you're in time, you both arrive at the same time.
It's almost like we have to restructure our living, how we do life in our brain with these deadlines. And I mean, that seems nearly impossible for the way that we do life now. But if everyone could sort of back up and live life in the way where we let life happen, that we don't make life happen, it seems like that would be such a better world, doesn't it?
I eat on time so that I can live in time. In other words, your intuition is built by eating foods on time or exercising on time or doing anything on time.
Mm-hmm. Makes a lot of sense.
So is it important? This brings me to one more quick question. With keeping a schedule then, like Justin loves to keep on a schedule. He has certain days he goes to the gyms. He has certain days it seems like structure would be really good for people because it keeps us going. It keeps us on time. But are we falsely creating a false sense of time doing that?
It depends on what time we're setting up, because all diseases ultimately are diseases of mistiming or no timing. Cancer is a disease of interfering with the cellular timing process, and being out of time creates cancer, as well as heart disease and a whole bunch of other ones. Now, were designed to be out of time during lunar time, when the force of the moon's gravity can raise our, well, what was it, a couple of months ago, you saw the coast, the huge waves that were here.
Mm-hmm.
Great,
right.
Great for surfers, but not for people getting flooded along the coast.
Mm-hmm.
Hmm.
Really interesting. We got a question here. Mike for Health just joined us in the chat room.
Nice.
So welcome, Mike. Guest 2249 in the chat room says, is there a way to heal food allergies? And do you know anything about that?
Sugar. Strange as it seems. What happens is allergies form from aerobic glycolysis, the very thing that Otto Warburg and W.F. Koch warned us about a long time ago. And the incomplete burning of sugar can do it. One way to get rid of allergies is breathe into a paper bag at night, not during the daytime, but at night, and get extra carbon dioxide into your body, which helps metabolize the sugar to its greatest degree. Complex carbohydrates and polyunsaturated fatty acids of omega-3s, omega-6 cause allergies.
So say that again. Say that last bit again.
Omega-3s and omega-6, fish oils and seed oils, uh-huh, are major causes of allergies, as are most complex carbohydrates. There are exceptions like some rice and potatoes.
Interesting. So what other types of sugar do you think would be best? I mean, I guess when you say sugar, that could mean a lot of different things.
Fructose is best, but okay, it must be in a whole form that has, when fruit has potassium in it, it acts like insulin. So fructose is the most absorbable sugar, and of course, medical doctors claim that it causes cancer and causes problems. And indeed, when you make it like they do, by complexing complex carbohydrates with high fructose corn syrup, you get in trouble. But when you eat it out of the fruit, like a persimmon or a high fruit, a high sugar fruit, not a banana, which is a complex carbohydrate, mm-hmm, unless you eat them when they are almost decomposed, mm-hmm, that works. But anyway, that is actually a cure for allergies.
Hmm.
It must be combined with protein. Now, ketosis causes allergies. When people eat meat, that's okay, but make sure you back it up with some kind of sugar product. Whole is best. White sugar, though, can actually cure a snake bite and various infections very quickly. The Chinese knew that. They developed white sugar for a medical technique, not for a regular food.
How are they curing snake bites or treating them with white sugar?
You just put white sugar on it. It works on infections. Nurses have known it. Actually, for centuries it's been known, but you can read about it in nursing journals. It neutralizes poison, and it neutralizes infections.
Wow.
It's when people have said that honey works on infections, and they've tried to blame all kinds of chemicals, it's really just the sugar in it that works. But sugar's got a bad rap because the doctors want people to be down on sugar and salt. Animals will go several hundred miles to get some salt. The same, mm-hmm, with certain sugars.
Yeah, they've done those sort of experiments, or not experiments, but they've tracked the animals, right, in Africa. They'll march hundreds of miles to find somewhere where they can get some salt.
Hmm. They will. And in Texas, they use – it's illegal, but you can trap a deer by – they'll come to the salt block. And
yeah,
then you shoot them.
That doesn't end well.
And somehow salt's been demonized, right?
Been demonized. And actually, salt will drop blood pressure. But the doctors are telling you it raises blood pressure. Actually, a proper balance of calcium, sodium – potassium and magnesium will regulate blood pressure. The other thing that'll drop it is just breathing into a paper bag at night. Don't breathe in the paper bag during the middle of the day. You can cause a heart attack. In fact, they kill a lot of people, including my own mother, by giving her oxygen when she had a heart attack.
You're kidding.
What happened there?
Well, they didn't use carbon dioxide. Now, I tried to break through, but they held me back and said, you know, use a paper bag. And actually, the best way is if the night crews, the emergency crews, showed up with a little bit of carbon dioxide mixed into the oxygen, even 2% would be enough to revive a person. But it's no accident that they find it hard to revive a person at night. Well, CPR works great during the middle of the day, but if you press the middle of the chest of a person at night, you're killing them. You need the side of the chest on the artery, excuse me, the vein, the pulmonary vein, to retrieve a person's life at night.
So when you're with someone's doing CPR at night, you want to, like, where should they be putting their hands?
On the left side of the body, that's where they should be pushing, because the pulmonary vein and artery are reversed. The artery delivers carbon dioxide and the vein delivers oxygen. Things reverse. That's why our nighttime is so different from our daytime. There's a tremendous difference in the atmosphere, as scientists like Picardy and others have proven, and they have been conveniently forgotten by scientists today.
So what's going on, like, in the evening? How long should they be breathing into that paper bag if they're wanting to deal with their food allergies?
Just a little bit, and sometimes having more carbon dioxide in the room, actually being enclosed in a smaller room, can help. You know, meditating in a closet. Monks used to do that. They used to go in small rooms and rebreathe their own carbon dioxide. You don't want too much. Carbon dioxide can be fatal.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, especially during the day. We're designed to have more oxygen in the middle of the day and the least oxygen at 4 in the morning.
We had a listener question come in yesterday about pregnancy and what types of vitamins, minerals, foods, and things outside of eating on time, because it looks like she is eating on time, but outside of that, what should someone be taking or eating during their pregnancy?
A woman is highly intuitional at that time. So if she has a craving for something, even Häagen-Dazs, it's time to do that. The baby is in communication at that point, and you can get away. It's kind of like a lunar eating. Mm-hmm. You know, I wouldn't go eating too much junk food, but actually be a little looser, but make sure you get a lot of whole foods in the mix too.
Mm-hmm.
And you don't really need extra minerals. In fact, some extra minerals can cause problems unless you really know what you're doing. Most people, when you see these mixes of mm-hmm. magnesium versus calcium, it changes every decade. So people really don't understand what's going on. Also, if you eat vitamin C, people don't realize, like in food, you get dehydroascorbic acid, which is the antioxidant faction. The one we take is an oxidant. Well, the antioxidant can save you from a heart attack, that form of dehydroascorbic acid, while the ascorbic acid can kill you. Food knows the difference. A potato will have both dehydroascorbic acid and ascorbic acid in it and know how to balance it. It's actually smart food when you eat it as food. It has consciousness in the same way that Sir Chandra Bose knew that life is in vegetables just as much as it is in human beings, does not need neurology, and even a single mineral has consciousness and knows the second that its own demise occurs.
How do we know that?
First of all, Sir Jagadish Chandra Bose proved it, and now science is backing it up. You can go and find a whole bunch of videos and know that a vegetable knows when you mean it harm. A vegetable can actually be used as a witness at a murder trial. Wow. You know, the book, The Secret Life of Plants, was way ahead of its time. And it sounded preposterous when people read it back in the 70s, but it's being validated by science today. Go on YouTube and you'll be surprised what they're finding out about vegetables being conscious.
Yeah, we watched a whole documentary about it. I forget what it was called.
I think it was called The Secret Life of Plants.
Was it based on that book?
I believe so.
It's really fascinating about how plants, they'll actually work together in harmony. So if they find something, some sort of pest or some sort of you know, something that's going to come and eat them, even if it's not going to eat them, they'll work with the plant that's going to be eaten in anticipation, and they'll secrete all these different smells and things like that, and they'll work together to ward off this pest. And it's just fascinating. All this stuff is going on, and we just had no idea.
Sir Jagadish Chandra Bose was a friend of Yogananda's. He was a scientist. They tried to restrict his funding because neurology was a hot topic at that time. They didn't want his information to get out of there, that trees and bushes and carrots have consciousness, even individual metals. Tin, by the way, is one of the most conscious metals of all. Platinum is another one, much more than zinc.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I've heard tin is incredible for hair loss, I heard recently.
In small amounts, yes.
Amazing.
Again, it's a amount. Calcium can kill you. Any of these minerals can kill you. Iron overload is common. It's killing thousands of people when people were taking Geritol and vitamins like that. By the way, people who have high iron levels, coffee blocks that and protects hemocytosis and other forms of cytosis or iron overload. They can even happen from vegetables. One time, I may have told you this story already, I worked as a manager of a health food store, and a man walked by dressed like Tom Cruise in his vampire outfit. So we caught eyes, and he walked up to me and said, "I am not a vampire." I said, "Well, that's nice, but you have a gray complexion, which shows you have some iron overload." Uh-huh. He said, "Well, I can't because I'm a vegetarian." And I said, "Well, even vegetables can give you iron overload." Hmm. He said, "Oh, yes? For instance, what?" I said, "Black olives in a can that have iron fumarate." And he said, "Oh, my God, I eat 2 cans of olives, black olives a day." And I said, "Well, you're headed for a cruise and for a bruising here if you don't stop doing that, because you definitely have iron overload, and that's a serious disease."
Wow. So when
you can see with a gray complexion on a person, it will show up. That's when it's at its extreme level, though. I didn't tell them that.
So what about people who are, quote, anemic or have issues with the stuff and they're told to take more iron? Is that a really bad thing?
Oh, yes. They used to – see, the difference is hemoglobin deficiency versus iron deficiency. Hemoglobin contains protein. It contains copper, it contains zinc, it contains all of these minerals. All of the minerals associated with the fourth level of the periodic table of the elements, which is a chakra chart. It has 7 levels. It's funny that the metaphysical community hasn't noticed that yet. The fourth level is the blood cell. The third level, which has sodium chloride, is the extracellular level.
That's wild.
And you can target it. Just like our body is a 7-story building, and you can target instead of blowing up the whole building for cancer, you can target which floor the cancer is on. And then its acid or alkaline function is done alternately in the vertical columns of the periodic table of the elements. So then you can tell which ones are anabolic, which ones are catabolic, which ones are acid-forming, and which ones are alkaline-forming, and find the correct floor and the correct suite and get the terrorist instead of blowing up the whole building or randomly doing it one room at a time, one floor at a time.
This whole iron thing is interesting because I was just learning about this recently where someone was saying that you know, people that are anemic, I was just telling you this, Kate, the other day, it's not necessarily anemia, because he was talking about biological transmutation and how with anemia, he said people could be, have enough iron in their body, but they could still be anemic. And then he was talking about what's more important than iron is manganese. And he was saying people can have, low amounts of manganese, but high iron and still be anemic. And he was saying what you need for anemia is, he said, all the same stuff you were talking about with the oxygen in the cell and the red blood cells. And then he was saying about anemia to take more magnesium or manganese.
Mm-hmm.
For that particular condition.
Balance that out.
Yeah.
It's a good idea to get it in food, but mm-hmm. if you take too much of it, you feed Lyme disease. Lyme disease doesn't need iron like most bacteria do. In fact, if a person has an infection, the first thing to do is cut down on iron. But if they have Lyme disease, they cut down on manganese.
Interesting. Golly. Kate, we have a listener question, don't we?
Yeah, we have Mike in the chat. Nice. He asked a really good question. He says, I've been following a ketogenic diet, and I have a persistent rash that does not seem to go away. Is this possibly because I'm not getting enough fructose?
Yes, or any kind of sugar, because that takes you out of ketosis. Most people who think they're in ketosis aren't in ketosis because they are eating sugar in some ways. The Inuit, or the Eskimos, they ate the intestinal contents, and also they ate every part of an animal, including the liver, which is packed with sugar. It's concentrated sugar called glycogen. Mm-hmm. So many people have to be tested to see if they're in ketosis or ketoacidosis, which is the worst form. Acidity is very good for you because it increases oxygen absorption, but a ketotic diet can make you more fit. You can be a great bodybuilder, but fitness and longevity are two different things. People often confuse them. You can have both, but it's rare. People like the Turban Tornado, who is a total vegetarian, he's 104, still running marathon races, running 25 miles, and he's doing both longevity and fitness.
What is this guy's name?
The Turban Tornado, his name is Singh, as all Sikhs have the last name Singh. The rest of his name I forget. Look at Turban Tornado, and he's still a ladies' man. He's hanging out with the ladies.
Well, there's
how old is he? 104?
105, I believe. Oh, he was still alive last time I checked last month.
Have you heard of Bernardo LaPaolo? He's like 115 or 116 now, and he's doing some sort of he's Brazilian, but he lives here, I think, somewhere in LA, but I think he does some sort of special diet, but fascinating guy.
I think I've heard him interviewed on YouTube.
Yeah.
See, our longevity experts are unfortunately misleading us. There is a magazine called Life Extension. Mm-hmm. It's a biotechnology magazine. All their money goes to biotechnology. Audrey de Grey, all that, they're biotechnologists.
Right, right.
And they lead us to incorrect – if you follow the instructions in their magazine, like caloric restriction, that kills people. Roy Walford, the longevity expert, quote unquote, who was associated with that magazine, died of Lou Gehrig's disease from simple caloric restriction.
So what is the deal with all those tests they present saying that a lower calorie diet equals, you know, higher longevity and things like that?
I guess they want to kill people because it does. Well, you need sugar and food to a degree. Now, I'm not saying overeating. That's another thing. But undereating and attempting to get your high-nutrient diet actually kills people because the sugar and salt and the large elements that we eat are more important than the micro elements. You know, too many minerals can actually age you. I'm not against mineral supplements, but it's been known for centuries that minerals age, but they protect you against cancer. Lack of minerals give you cancer, but you don't age. So it's called the razor's edge. Yogis have talked about this for a long time. There's even a book written called The Razor's Edge and two movies made about it, maybe three.
So you want to find that fine balance of not aging but also not getting cancers and things like that.
Exactly. Yeah. In other words, people are more interested in mineralizing than they are in nutrientizing.
Okay.
I'm making up a word there.
I like it.
I like it. Add it to the dictionary this 2016. What do you just to give me a picture of what, like, on an average day in a diet, what would be enough sugar? Like, what would be – I'm just curious what that looks
like. That nice practical
application here.
Well, lately we're getting a good dose for breakfast. We have persimmons and figs.
Yum.
And the figs are dried. We have prunes and apples.
And that's breakfast.
And dates. Yep.
And dates.
For breakfast. Now, we'll have a small amount. Obviously, we don't want to eat too much. I'll have, we'll have a prune a piece, a fig a piece, a date a piece, a chunk of apple, share an apple usually, and mm-hmm. share a persimmon or two. We love persimmons. They're in season right now. Midday, one of the most highest fruito vegetables is actually a berry, is the tomato. So we eat a lot of tomatoes. Right now, the early girl ones are still in season, so we're enjoying those.
Huh.
The fruto vegetables are higher in sugar. That's why your peppers, your zucchinis, your squash, and cucumbers even.
So is the sugar important? I mean, if that's the amount of sugar you guys are getting, is it important to do? I know it's eating on time, but is that important to get in the morning, or does it matter?
In the morning, midday, and evening. We get our sugar from potato at night.
Okay.
And from carrots. And, you know, carrots are high. If you check glycemic index charts, it's valid. But more important is glycemic response. What does it do for your body? Mm-hmm. You'll hear about glycemic index. That's individual. You're just testing the food by itself. Then glycemic load is important, how much sugar is in the food. Mm-hmm. But glycemic response, how much does it raise your blood sugar, that's what's more important. And that's most glycemic index books leave that out entirely.
So, Adam, we have a question here from Mike, and I just responded to him in the chat room as you're talking, but he was asking about, you know, is there a specific diet that you like to follow? And my response to him was, you know, because he says, is there a specific diet Adam likes to follow, or is his stance different and no one diet works for everyone? And my response was that it's not necessarily the diet more than it is what time we actually eat. But obviously, you follow some sort of protocols when you eat, because you'll combine them correctly and you'll eat them on time. But, you know, I've heard you talk before that you can eat things like, you know, Twinkies or Haagen-Dazs ice cream and these types of things. But if you are going to eat them, you want to make sure you eat them at the right time. But what sort of diet do you follow in terms of the actual food that you consume?
That's a good question.
I'm pretty close to an ovo-lacto-vegetarian these days. I'm not against meat eating. I've been there. I've eaten lots of meat in my time.
Uh-huh.
The paleo diet, which is misnamed, by the way. The paleo diet, primitive man did not eat meat. Some of them did. The Eskimos obviously did. The Spartans were vegetarians. The Greeks were vegetarians until the time of the Olympics. A lot of people, in fact, most of the world was vegetarian at one time. And even back in caveman days, they highly depended on vegetables, including the American Indians, who were growing potatoes a long time before the white man ever showed up. Now, the Plains Indian ate more meat, so it depended. So there is no real paleo diet, mm-hmm. but you would call it the meat-eating diet or something like that would work. The meat-eating is okay as long as you have compensating sugars. Any bodybuilder will know that if you're going to eat meat, you want to have sugar to compensate it so you don't go into ketosis when you're bodybuilding. Mm-hmm. It's a bodybuilder's enemy to mm-hmm. to not eat sugar, because the sugar keeps the muscle from burning. Otherwise, if you're bodybuilding and you're eating nothing but protein, you're burning your own muscle, which you want to preserve. So they call it protein sparing, and that's exactly what a sugar does, protein sparing. Now, we're omnivores. We can eat a lot of things. Have you heard of Mr. Eats-It-All?
No.
Mr. Eats-It-All took 2 years to eat an entire Cessna 150 airplane.
I have heard of this guy.
Yeah, I didn't know his name. I read a book about him, actually.
Yep, he ate about 18 bicycles, I forget how many shopping carts, razor blades on a regular basis, but he couldn't eat bananas. They disagreed with him. They did x-rays, and he was actually digesting this stuff.
Oh, what in the world?
I'd like to test that guy's blood.
Yeah, there was a book I read called The Man Who Ate the 747.
Yeah.
And I think it was a novel, but based on this guy's life. What a wacky thing.
Yep. And my son had a friend that used to eat bottles.
Really?
Glass and all. He ate them. And in the Middle East, they used to do nightclub acts among the Sufis. doing that kind of thing. In Indonesia, they have nighttime acts. But this guy, my son's friend, would avoid fights. He would go into a bar, and when someone would glare at him, he'd ask for an entire pint bottle of booze. He would chug-a-lug it down and then eat the bottle and stop the fight before it began.
What? That is crazy.
How is that not slashing your intestines on the way down? That's crazy.
Most people, I wouldn't recommend it. Sometimes a little piece of glass can do it. My half-brother actually swallowed a diaper pin when he was small, and the doctor said, let's wait and see what happens. It came out completely out of his anus.
Wow.
Without any cuts knowledgeable or that we knew about.
There was this crazy show Justin and I got into for a while, when we had cable TV, but it was like called My Crazy Obsession or My Strange Fetish.
Strange Food Addiction, right?
It was something crazy. Yeah, maybe it was My Strange. Anyway, there was this girl on there that had to be in her late teens, early 20s, and she was just obsessed with eating pottery. It would be, you know, clay pots and all this pottery. If it was, you know, made by hand, she couldn't handle herself and she'd just eat it. So it was really funny. They tried to treat her for the addiction, and I still find it funny. I laugh so hard. Her mom was being interviewed about her daughter's strange, you know, diet or whatever. And then they did some therapy with her, and then the mom takes her to like a Color Me Mine pottery place, and they have like this like pottery party, and they're painting, and to show that the girl, you know, isn't so like obsessed with eating it, she could actually enjoy the pottery. And I just thought that was the funniest thing. But something interesting there with like the clay, though. Like the, you know, I thought she's eating this stuff. She was thriving apparently, and I thought, I wonder if she's just soaking up so many toxins that actually was what she was craving was actually her medicine. I mean, it sounds crazy, but
it's called geophagy, if I'm pronouncing that correctly, and it usually involves a mineral deficiency of some sort.
That makes sense.
That she's either not getting in her food or her body cannot convert it correctly. In other words, a qualitative problem instead of a quantitative problem.
Interesting. Hey, we have one final question here about hormones, but I want to go back to what you're saying really quickly about the paleo diet. What a lot of people don't realize about the paleo diet is a lot of the meats that we're eating, Daniel Vitalis talks about this, is coming from sort of these hybridized animals that never really existed. And he's a proponent of eating like wild meat and wild game. And his contention is that the energetics from eating that kind of meat is going to be much different than if you're eating, you know, strictly the muscle meat of like a cow or something like that. You're getting this sort of dumbed down, hybridized animal that was never supposed to be in existence because, you know, cows are hybridized from, I think, the aurochs or something like that. And so he's a big proponent of wild food. And so to your point, Adam, when you were saying that we don't really have a paleolithic diet, you know, back then people weren't consuming meat from cows and these meats from hybridized animals.
Some of them consumed no meat at all, mm-hmm. but the wild animal was better because, for instance, grass-fed animals can cause cancer. Not beef, but chicken and other animals can because they can't convert the omega-6s into saturated fats. And by the way, our saturated fat in our body, what are we mostly? We're not saturated fat. We're the same as an olive. Our bodies are closer to an olive than we are to a cow because we're mostly oleic acid.
Oleic acid. Omega-9. Interesting. Yeah, I've been eating olives lately, so that makes me feel good.
They're Look very at good. I have them every day for breakfast.
Look what we find out on the show. Our bodies are like an olive. Stay away from gray water and gray aliens.
Well, that's something I didn't know. That's
pretty wild. gray aliens. Hey, real quick, before you ask your last question,
on hormones,
I'm just going to throw this in here from Mike. He wants to know Adam's take on intermittent fasting.
Oh, cool.
One day a week is a good way to do it, as long as you get your sugars to spare your protein. Now, in a less toxic society, you could get away with longer fasting. Unfortunately, in our society, you move the toxin, but are you moving it into the bone or are you moving it out of the body? And most people don't have the science behind that to know which way that toxin's going. Mm-hmm. But one day a week, like having a juice fast of nothing but apple juice all day. And in this case, you do a mono diet, which is a cleansing diet. When you eat foods in three times a day, it's a building diet. But once in a while, you want to cleanse your body. So then you have apple juice morning, noon, or night. Or you could do it on time by having apple juice in the morning, tomato juice in the middle of the day, pineapple juice at night. The three of those together, actually, orange juice would be a good solution in the morning, tomato juice in the middle of the day, and pineapple juice at night. It's like clearing the wreckage. The orange is the police that arrive on the scene and move the wreck out of the way. The tomato is the ambulance that shows up to cart the person away. And the pineapple juice acts as cleaning the wreckage out, or completely clearing the freeway so that people can get on their way.
Yeah, that makes sense, because if you're just moving toxins around, that's the point.
So with by the way, homeopathic medicine is another way of looking at it. They didn't detoxify at all. There's no detoxification in homeopathic. Mm-hmm. If you ever hear a person who claims to be a homeopath and they talk about detoxification, they haven't read Samuel Hahnemann, the founder of homeopathy's books.
Interesting. So in terms of the tomato in the middle of the day, are you talking about like running it through a juicer or blending it? And then what if people are averse to nightshades?
Most of them aren't. How the problem with nightshades came out is when people would remove the urate, which is neutral in their body as a neutral salt, and it would convert to uric acid on the way out, it would hurt them. So they would think, oh, it's aggravating my arthritis syndrome, so I can't take tomato. And actually, it's the best thing for it. And it's very rich in sugar.
And
also, by the way, eating a store-bought tomato is toxic, because it's a sulfated tomato, and eating an unripe tomato can have consequences. You want a sun-ripened tomato, and any tomato that isn't completely ripened, you neutralize it by cooking it.
Okay.
And that solves the problem.
And so are you talking about juicing it or running it through inside a blender?
You could just get Lakewood tomato or Lakeside, is it, tomato juice, something like that if you were lazy. But you could juice it too or blend it.
Okay.
Blend it, you get the whole fruit in the blending of
it. That's true.
In fact, that's what we do. We have now we blend up my partner in crime here, Vibrant Gal. She blends up tomato and some peppers and sometimes a little green onion, and we have that for lunch with some goat cheese or sheep cheese.
Yum.
Look at that. Wow, you're making me hungry.
It's really good. And then a little cooked broccoli I have for a little cruciferous vegetable balance.
Wow, you're going to live to
vitamin
your...
Vitamin K is what I mainly take that for. Vitamin K helps vitamin D work too, so it's a good thing to be having.
Yeah, well, you're taking K for a... Well, yeah. We should get it through our food, but we were taking a K.
Yeah, supplement. We're doing supplemental K.
We were.
There are so many different forms of K. It's best to get it out of food, but there's a case to be made for getting it out of supplement, too. It's a very important mineral.
But a lot of people don't talk about it. We had a lady on the show. I forget who she was. Do you remember?
Kate Rayon Bleu.
That's right. I'll talk all about that. Rayon Bleu.
Rayon Bleu.
She was our Canadian friend, right?
Yeah. She talked all about vitamin K2 and heart attacks and things.
It's important. K2 and K3 and all the types, that they occur at food at different times of the day. So
I think I'm just going to rename my name.
When you take it as a supplement, you take it as one way. It's good to find out how it's made. Often vitamins are made by joining them together, taking carbon, hydrogen, and oxygen, building them. So they're built out of corn, petroleum products, things like that. They're not. They don't get them out of food. Very, very rarely, because it's too expensive. When you take a B vitamin, it's usually made from coal tar. When you take a vitamin C, it's usually manufactured out of just about anything. They even make some supplements out of old used tires.
My goodness, I've heard that before. Is that bizarre or what?
Lemon oil, particularly, or limonene, is made out of tires now. About 20% of it, I believe.
Wow.
Sure, why not? That's amazing. We recycle water, we recycle tires.
Why not? Just make supplements out of them.
Gray vitamins.
Yeah. Gray vitamins. Great. Now there's a market.
One final question here, Adam. Yes. Before we take off for the day, what do you recommend for hormones and balancing hormones? This is a big issue with people today with the exposures to xenoestrogens from plastics and phytoestrogens from different foods like nuts and seeds. And is that an issue? And also, how do people get on top of their hormones so that they're fully vibrant?
Eat foods on time and beware of supplements like melatonin, which is estrogenic. And it's not just xenoestrogens, it's estrogen. Estrogen is made as a therapy. It's not made as a food. So when people do hormone balancing with estrogen, they often get in trouble. Even the bioidentical ones are more dangerous than the xenoestrogens.
Why is that?
Because estrogen is made to be used sparingly. It's no accident that a woman is low in estrogen after childbirth occurs. Uh-huh. It's meant to be that way. And serotonin increases it. There's a whole bunch of things. Polyunsaturated acids increase it. All cancers have polyunsaturated acids in them. They have omega-6s, not even omega-3s. Omega-3s from fish oil are toxic, but they'll never go into a cancer. But omega-6s from polyunsaturated fatty acids, that's cancer's favorite food, not sugar as commonly believed. The only time you get a problem with sugar, as Otto Warburg pointed out, mm-hmm. when the sugar isn't burned entirely, and then you get aerobic glycolysis or lactic overload, and cancer's growth depends on lactic acid. William Koch was more correct because Warburg only associated glycolysis with the mitochondria, mm-hmm. but it actually happens throughout your body. Koch was before Warburg, prior to him, and more complete than Warburg's understanding of cancer.
Yeah, because Warburg talked about depriving the cell of, I think, 33% oxygen over a course of something like 40 hours or 48 hours, and that's when he was finding all his cancer growth and things, right?
That's right, from aerobic glycolysis. Now, it's been misinterpreted. People say avoid sugar. That's a sure way. By eating complex carbohydrates and polyunsaturated fatty acids in those foods, you actually build cancer.
So what do you think about that whole diet thing that's going around? People talk about the 30 bananas a day, and they're basically fruitarians. What do you make of all that?
It's a complex carbohydrate, so it is not the smartest fruit to be eating. However, we'll study Durian Ryder and see how he's doing as he ages.
Yeah.
As he ages.
And,
you know, attitude has a lot to do with it, too. He gets a lot of exercise and stuff. He may live to be a very old man.
We don't know until we, you know, it'd be nice. Like you said, what were you saying earlier about the bacteria, how they can double, you know, replicate, you know, every second or something like that? That would be so great for humans. You know, could you imagine the amount of testing you could do if you could test, someone's
yourself.
Lifetime in a couple days?
That's right. The best person to test are old people. But longevity research, they're too busy studying yeast and mice and rabbits and dogs and things like that, that they don't get it. In fact, on heart surgery, a pig heart, which are even do most of the studies on heart problems, they can't develop collateral circulation. It's the totally wrong thing. They used to always do heart research on dogs, but it is politically incorrect.
It's amazing.
A dog heart is closest to a human heart than any other animal.
Wow.
Our little dog friends.
They can develop collateral circulation. In other words, you can have a heart attack and develop veins around it. You can develop an abscess, an aneurysm, any kind of condition, and build those collateral circulations. You don't have to necessarily use EECP. You can use things like caffeine, compression, anti-gravity work, all kinds of things can develop that collateral circulation.
That's amazing.
So, and in the right place, because if you develop it in the wrong place, too far away from an aneurysm, it can increase it. If you develop it right against it, then it can decrease it because the circulation goes around and doesn't feed the aneurysm.
That's so interesting.
So complex.
Yeah. Tell people more about your SunSync Nutrition. You said that was a website where people, it's a subscription-based website, and people want to learn more, because we have some people in our chat room who are interested in what you're talking about here.
$99, one-time fee, and you two are signed up.
Woo-hoo.
I guessed you.
That's
By
right.
By the way, I'll be doing in pretty close time. You're welcome to come up as a guest for my intensive. I'm going to do it at La Casa de Maria. You've been there, Kate, haven't you?
Adam, that's my favorite place in the world.
I like it, too.
Oh, no, seriously, it is my favorite place. Are you really?
We're making an arrangement to do a basically a 9 to 9, 9 a.m. to 9 p.m. intensive on body language and on SunSync eating. And it's still in the works. March is a possibility.
Wow.
Of course, the only fee you'd have is to for Casa de Maria between them and you. Otherwise, my workshop, which will cost other people $300, will be absolutely free.
Oh, my goodness.
Thanks,
and
Adam.
And remember, you're members of SunSync, so go on there. There's a search function now, so if you want to find something out, my main blogs are a little hard to understand. They're for people who really want to get into the nitty-gritty of this, but I have many comments and things available for people who want to just kind of skim around the edges before they jump into the deep water.
Nice. That's
Adam,
great.
Thank you.
So the SunSync Nutrition is also an app, right? People can get that on their phone and kind of mess around. I'm not really too familiar with phones, but you can be reminded of different times of the day, what foods are good in specific times of the day and things like that, right?
We have a food list that's very complete. It has just about every food, including exotic ones that you haven't even heard about, listed on there. And there's an option to ask questions too.
I love it. SunSync Nutrition. Then you're still running solartiming.com too, is that right?
Solar Timing is kind of our gateway. We have introductory information. We have photographs and interesting little stories and YouTubes, things like that on there.
I'll throw that up in the chat, too.
And we sell our books there now. I forgot about that.
Oh,
oh yeah. You have
That'd
a ton
be important.
Of books, don't you?
E-books and little e-booklets, like I did one now on the I Ching, and one called a Soufenary, which is a dictionary of soupy terms.
Nice. Solar Time.
And consultations, too, are available.
I have to say, our friend Farmer Mark in the chat room is going to be having an appointment with you this Sunday, and he's so excited about it.
Oh, no way.
Ah, okay. That's Farmer Mark.
He's a buddy of ours, and he's just thrilled about this. He says he's been waiting to pull the trigger forever, so I hope you guys have a blast together, and can't wait to hear about it.
Wonderful. Looking forward to meeting him.
Yeah, absolutely. Cool guy.
Awesome. Well, thanks, Adam, for your time today and for the offer. How amazing that's going to be in March sometime. And thanks for being on with us today.
Thanks for inviting me, as usual, and have a wonderful day.
I know. It was such short notice, but I'm glad you're available.
Yeah, thanks, Adam. Appreciate it.
It's all in the timing.
That's right.
Amen.
Synchronicity.
I was on my email site when it came in.
Oh, well, that was solar
perfect,
timing.
Perfect timing, right? Well, thanks, Adam. And if you want to visit Adam's website, check it out, solartiming.com. Adam, stay on the line there really quickly. We're going to close off the live show. But I just want to thank everyone for joining us in the chat room. Farmer Mark, guest 2249.
Mike
for health, and others as well. So thank you guys for being a part of the show. And we do broadcast every Friday at 9 a.m. Pacific time at extremehealthradio.com/live. So if you want to share that show, if you see a show coming up that you think a friend or a family member might enjoy, might get something out of, make sure to send that link to them so they can listen live if their schedule allows for it. And also, we are 100% listener supported. So if you want to support us by making your Christmas purchases through our Amazon link, that would be a great way to support us without donating or anything like that. You can also bookmark the Amazon link as well. And that's really, really helpful, too. So if you use the bookmark every time you make a purchase on Amazon, that supports us. And check out our store. We've got lots of great products in our store as well. So anyway, thank you everybody for joining us live. We hope you have a great week and great weekend. And that's
we'll catch you on the next episode.
All right. Done. Another episode. And Maggie's crying. Is that Maggie crying?
Yeah. She knows when we're, she knows the tone of when we're saying goodbye to a guest. She'll just get out of her little circle. She's crawled up in the corner and just run over and
she expects
the reward. I don't know. She's talk about intuitive.
Dogs are. Whew. What did Adam say something about?
Dog hearts.
Yeah.
Well, I could see it. Probably that's why. I mean, that would explain why the connection with us and dogs in particular is really, really strong. They're the most like-hearted. Mm-hmm. If you really want to take that to like a physical, spiritual, emotional connection, I mean, that kind of makes sense. Our heart goes out to theirs the most, you know?
So you were saying to Adam off the air that this was one of your favorite episodes. You liked it?
The illustrious Adam Bergstrom. This is my favorite episode.
Really?
With him, I think. Yeah, I felt like...
He's good.
I felt like it was a really good combination of practicality... meets kind of out there spirituality
esoteric stuff.
Because
if you lean towards one way, if you're only practical, then you're forgetting all the spiritual, emotional stuff. If you're getting into all that, you miss the physical stuff.
Right.
So you like the balance?
I really liked the balance. I still think it's hard. To be honest, I haven't completely delved into his work. He's given us access to his website, which is amazing, and I should take more advantage of it for sure. But what little I do know, I'm still like, oh my gosh, I feel like I could scour that website for 5 years and still not understand half the stuff he's talking about. It's just so, I don't know how he gets
so
knowledgeable
stuff.
Of all these things. Cause I mean, my gosh, yeah, like the average person's going to hear that show we did with Kate Ray on Blue and hear about vitamin K and go take vitamin K, or, you know, hear our other multiple guests talk about how good vitamin D is for you and all this stuff. And then it's just funny that Adam has reasons, at least, to back why he thinks these things aren't great in supplement form and why you should be getting them from food. But only certain things don't gel with other things, and other things bring out other good things. And it's like, oh my gosh, like you'd have to be a biochemist / Swami /
you'd have to have, yeah,
God to like understand what's really going on.
What do you think he said about the melatonin?
Well, I don't know.
Being,
I mean,
estrogenic, is that what he said?
Yeah, which is interesting because I was taking it for so long.
How could it be a
daily?
How it's such a strong cancer preventer when cancers, I mean, traditionally an alternative. It's weird because you have like these two groups of people. You have like the natural on an alternative side, and then you have the medical side, right?
Mm-hmm.
But then within a natural alternative, you almost have the same division between points of view. So like within the natural side, it's common knowledge that melatonin is a huge cancer preventer.
Right.
But then we also know, or supposedly know, that there's a connection between estrogens and cancer.
Right, right.
So if it's driving estrogen levels, melatonin, how could it be such a cancer preventer? Unless... Oh,
hello, Maggie.
Maggie decides to join.
Jumped up.
Unless the... Not all cancers are estrogen. And I heard like leukemias, and there's a couple cancers that aren't as much driven by estrogen.
Interesting.
From what I know, but I've never heard that before about...
Melatonin?
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't know enough about it. That's the first I've heard of that, too.
Because Dr. Massey was talking about how it's possible for people to take... 50 milligrams of that a day.
A melatonin.
I think we take 10, and that's hard to do.
I do know that melatonin, though, just like flattens you out at night.
Yeah.
It definitely makes me... What's the weirdest thing I've noticed about taking melatonin is I dream different.
Yeah?
Yeah, I'll dream the nights I take it, I won't have any dreams. The nights when I don't take it, I'll have super vivid dreams. And it's almost like... This experiment I've done over a matter of time now that seems to be pretty right on. It's pretty spot on. Like last night's the first time I took melatonin in probably a month and a half.
Oh, really?
And I didn't barely dream at all. So the other nights I'm just super, my mind is just going and going and going.
It's shutting down somehow your dream abilities to dream.
I like how I feel when I'm on melatonin when I sleep. I get an awesome sleep. But yeah, I don't know if that's, everything's hormone related. So
it's funny because I haven't taken melatonin in a long time. I haven't needed to. Like You know, for a while there, I was taking it in order to fall asleep for a while. And then, you know, I'm so spent by the end of the day. I just can't do, taking anything extra would just be too much.
Right. You wouldn't wake up the next morning.
Yeah.
I mean, you'd wake up, but you'd be like groggy probably.
How about the whole thing about transferring vitamin D? That was crazy too.
Yeah.
You know, through the breath.
Yeah.
That's weird.
That's interesting though. When he said that, I thought of all the times when, you know, I've been at the hair salon back in the day, working a full day, and you work and work, and then you go take your break outside, mm-hmm. and you'll go on like a 2-hour beach walk to get really good. You'll listen to your iPod. Uh-huh. And then you'll go on the beach trail, soak up all this vitamin D without your shirt on, and you come back, and then I'll come back from later that night of working. And I feel, it does feel good to be around someone who's been in the sun, like, I even felt like you transferred warmth to me. It's like,
oh, really?
Yeah, it's almost like you can tell who's somebody who's been in nature and
vibrancy. Like,
yeah, there's some
something.
Sort of a shift, you know, that I do feel like a frequency you give off, and you know, you're happier, and your endorphins are running, or maybe not your endorphins. What else is it? The oxytocin.
Oh, right.
And things like that. And I think that is contagious, being around people who have these hormone pumps, and then you're also. Yeah, gaining this vitamin D. That's interesting, though, when he said physically about passing it through breath and carbon dioxide. Because I thought he was going to say you transfer it, like, you know, magnetically, or, you know, you can transfer it
through your eyes.
Yeah, something crazy. But, yeah. I mean, that does make sense. Your body process of expelling it. You're going to be in the same room with someone who's been soaking it up all day. Would be good for you. Strange.
What do you think about all the coffee? Like, how much coffee? I mean, what he's doing is working for him. He sounds amazing. I don't know how old he is, but he sounds like he's, you know.
Vibrant.
Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, you were talking this week to me. We were talking about something about coffee, the great coffee debate.
Mm-hmm.
Like the great food debate.
Right.
But you were saying that, the study they do on older people, a lot of older people, it's like this oatmeal and coffee thing. Like, they all seem to have that in common. They drink coffee, most of them, and they have oatmeal every day.
I was going to ask him about oatmeal, but it didn't come across.
Well, question for next time. I don't know. I mean, there seems to be something to it. I just worry about, you know, the Starbucks coffee.
The mold?
Yeah, I mean, the mold, the carcinogens from the roasting process. Then it's boiled with basically gray water, if you want to say. Like, it's,
that's true.
I mean, I know it's heated to a really high temp, but I doubt it's boiling out all the bad things. It's like, you know, and then it's put into a cup and you're drinking through a plastic, you know, cap on the cup. I don't know if those are BPA free, but I don't know. I just have a problem with like conventional coffee places. I think that the attention to detail, to health detail that should go into that isn't being done on that level.
Yeah. I mean, I could understand like if you wanted coffee and you wanted something like that every now and then, that's okay. Maggie's going crazy.
All right, let me let her out.
You know, I could see that as far as, you know, wanting a little bit of coffee every now and then, but not necessarily like doing it every day. Could you imagine doing like 5 cups of Starbucks coffee or 5? You know, a lot of people do that.
A pot at the office, you know, throughout the day, they'll drink a pot of coffee or a couple pots.
Or some people put it in microwaves. Don't they do that?
Oh, yeah.
Like they'll put cold coffee back in the microwave and...
My mom does that throughout the whole day.
That's right.
She'll get her senior coffee at McDonald's drive-through, and then sip on it throughout the day. She swears it's the best coffee around. And, you know, she could be right. It could be less processed than other coffee, and it tastes better, and it's better for you. I have no idea, but the minute you're putting it in the microwave, then you got a whole other set of problems.
Yeah, and then, it's not good.
No.
Yeah.
I don't know. All I know is I could have a couple ounces of coffee, and I feel like my heart's going to explode, and I'm going to shake out of my body. So I don't like that feeling at all. It makes me feel completely disgusting. The cobalamin tonic, I don't think I've ever made it right.
Yeah, we haven't made it correctly with just those ingredients.
And the ratio, I mean, there's got to be a ratio that's a good thing. Because the first time I heard about it, I think you had mentioned it, and that this certain combo, doesn't it kind of negate the caffeine effect? If done properly, like you're not going to get the shakes and the shimmies?
Allegedly, yeah, that's the deal. Is it? And then also it's drinking it on time too, but... Yeah, bizarre. It's so interesting. I mean, it's the stuff that you're not going to hear from...
You're not going to hear this...
Yeah, you're not going to hear this.
I don't know if you'd ever hear this again in the world. I mean, Adam's a one-of-a-kind guy.
He's really cool.
God threw away the mold on that guy, didn't he?
Seriously, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I want to thank everyone for joining us today. This was episode 408, and I see, Kate, you took a bunch of notes for today's episode, so we'll have those.
I just did a bow.
You did a bow, mm-hmm. a lady bow. And we'll have those at extremehealthradio.com/408 if you want to get the links to everything. We'll link everything up that was talked about, the books, the websites, the people, and all
the
that.
Fun.
And the fun. We'll link everything up.
We'll link to the fun.
Yeah, so that'll be good if you want to check that out. And as we said before, we are 100% listener support, so please consider donating to our show. You can donate to us via Patreon. That's a really great way to keep the show free. It takes a lot of time and effort to produce these shows. This is what we do full time, and this is how we pay our bills. This is how we pay for our food for Maggie, for our own food. And so your support here is really, really critical in order to help us keep providing this kind of content. And so if you want to donate to us on Patreon and you have a Facebook account, you can do that. And it takes you about 2 seconds to about 30 seconds to create a little account, and then you can donate to us, you know, 50 cents a show, a dollar a show, 20 bucks a show, whatever you see fit and whatever value you're getting from us. We would appreciate that. And if you're unable to do that, you can also support us on Amazon by bookmarking our Amazon link. So that's kind of a free way to support us. You're not actively donating to us, but if you're already buying on Amazon, that would help us to go through our link first, to do that. And, if you are unable to do any of that and you're really hard up for cash, you can just share our shows on Facebook.
That's really helpful, you guys. All the shares we get are just, we need to up our share ante here.
Yeah.
Do you guys find value in it and think that, you just never know who's, that's the cool thing about social media, I think, on Facebook and stuff. You never know who's interested, but if you just share it and some of your friends go, oh, that's interesting. And then mm-hmm. they happen to have a mom or a brother who has this, that, or the other. I mean, we need to get the word out there more, and mm-hmm. we really need your guys' help because there's just two of us, but,
right.
You know, we're just trying to be the voice for a lot of hope. And, I think it's so awesome when people share stuff that I never would have come across had they not pressed the little share button. It's so easy, and just a lot of people could value this information. So every share and any share, we're just really grateful that the word's getting out. So thanks, you guys who do it, and I invite those who don't do it to consider that as a free way to help our work and also help the world. So.
Yeah, I think it's great, and
thank you.
If you're able to. Just follow us on Facebook, and if you like something that we share, just share it with your people, and that helps to get the word out as well. So
awesome.
All right. I think we're done.
I think that's a wrap.
That's a wrap, friends. We'll be back next Friday.
Well, Friday is Christmas.
Is next Friday Christmas?
We'll be back sometime next week.
Oh my gosh. Okay.
But I think we should do a wrap up New Year's show, perhaps. Recap the last year.
Yeah.
We did that last year. It was really fun.
Yeah.
So stay tuned, my friends.
Yeah. You know what the best way to do is stay tuned to our YouTube channel. That's where all the content gets published first. And that's where you can see this particular video or episode we did not do a video for. We couldn't get it together in time. But that's where all of our content shows up first. So follow us on YouTube if you want to get access to all that kind of stuff. So we'll be posting more stuff on YouTube. So stay tuned there. And that's it, right?
We thank you. Merry Christmas. Happy holidays. And we'll catch you guys on the next episode.
Hey, everybody. This is Josie, Justin's mom. Don't tell him, but I know he would absolutely be really happy if you would sign up to his free weekly newsletter. And don't forget to share this with all your friends. This is the buzzing bumblebee signing off.
Oh my gosh.
No material on this blog is intended to suggest that you should not seek professional medical care. Always work with qualified medical professionals, even if you educate yourself in the field of live food, nutrition, and alternative medicine. I'm not a doctor, nor am I offering readers medical advice of any kind. None of the information offered here should be interpreted as a diagnosis of any disease, nor an attempt to treat or prevent any disease or condition. While information in this blog is discussed in the context of numerous conditions, it can be dangerous to take action based on any information in this blog or to start any health program without first consulting a health professional. The content found here is for informational purposes only and is in no way intended as medical advice, as a substitute for medical counseling, or as a treatment/cure for any disease or health condition, and nor should it be continued as such. Always work with a qualified healthcare professional before making any changes to your diet, prescription drug use, lifestyle, or exercise activities. This information is provided as is, and the reader/viewer assumes all risks from the use, non-use, or misuse of this information.